Okay, welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Pastor Kevin Robertson. It is April 19th, 2017. And guess what? It's a day after taxes. So Jessica and myself are totally broke. Anyway, it's a week after Easter. We had a great Easter service. And if you joined us, we hope you enjoyed it. And a great baptism services as well. And so today I'm interviewing Jessica. Now, Jessica, I love to death because she is such a sweetheart. Jessica and I, let me just tell it right out, we are car wash buddies, right?
We are.
We are. And every once in a while, about once every 2 weeks, if I'm not very judgmental, I say, Jessica, your car needs washed because you have a nice BMW.
I do. Thank you.
And it's a white BMW, and when it's dirty, it's embarrassing to me. It's all about me.
Clearly.
So we've been doing that for car washing for 3 years, 2 years?
About 2 years.
Yeah. 2 years. So it's almost like therapeutic for both of us. We kind of talk and wash the car together. So I thought it would be kind of cool to interview Jessica because I've learned a lot about her in the 2 or 3 years that we've been washing cars. So Jessica, how did you find the church?
So I moved about 10 years ago to date, actually. And
from where?
New York.
Okay.
I lived across the street in the houses on Braddock.
Okay.
And probably about the fifth day, I think, after I moved, I figured I needed to find a church.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the sign, welcome. It also said something about multicultural.
Yeah, it was our old sign, multicultural mm-hmm. services.
Which kind of prompted me to just show up.
Okay. So you just showed up, and how long ago was this?
10 years ago.
10 years ago. Good mm-hmm. night, girl. 10 years ago. And so let's go back to when you were young.
Okay.
You were from New York.
From Brooklyn, yes.
Brooklyn, New York. And so you, and we kind of joke about, do you have that Brooklyn attitude?
I do.
That I just don't put up with crap.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, which is I love because you know where you stand with Jessica. You have no problems knowing that. And so, how was your childhood? Was it okay, brothers and sisters?
I have two older siblings, a brother who's 11 years older and a sister who's 6 years older.
Okay, difference.
Yeah, I had a pretty decent childhood.
Okay, and your dad was Christian and your mom was?
He's Pentecostal. And my mom's Jewish.
Okay, and every time we get together, you always say, my dad said, are you going to church?
Oh, gosh. Always. He said Pastor Kevin's able to discipline me if I don't come. So
Yeah. In fact, it's interesting because we were in the car and you called your dad just to say I was in church Sunday, which was funny to me. So, but your mother was Jewish. And
uh-huh,
she was practicing Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you have a Pentecostal dad and a Jewish mom. How does that mingle? I mean,
you know, I've been asked that my whole life.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it doesn't,
okay.
But most of the times it does. Anytime we bring up Christ and Him being the Messiah,
right?
My mother obviously objects. Normally will cause some sort of friction
mm-hmm.
in the house, so we just don't really talk about it.
Okay.
But once in a while, you know, I'll make a joke or my dad will make a joke that...
Yeah.
You know, just because she's the chosen one doesn't mean she's going to heaven if she doesn't believe in Christ. But it was interesting growing up. I mean, my grandfather was a pastor, so my father
really?
Was raised in the church.
Okay.
As well as both of my uncles are still pastors of
wow.
Pentecostal churches. And it's interesting because being raised Pentecostal, it's a lot stricter.
Right.
My grandmother never wore makeup. She wore a skirt, her hair in a bun, no earrings. All the years I've known her until she passed at 102. Never remarried. Very traditional, kind of strict Pentecostal.
So very conservative.
Very.
So you grew up in a conservative church.
Oh, completely, yeah.
Huh. And then, so what made you decide, okay, I'm going to choose to be a Christian or choose Jewish?
It never really was a matter of choosing.
Okay.
Because my father was the one that was more religious,
mm-hmm.
when my father married my mother, he had to marry my mother by a rabbi. So technically, my father converted to Judaism.
Okay.
They were married in a synagogue by a rabbi. But because he obviously was deeper in his faith,
right.
my mother just wanted to be married by a rabbi.
Right.
And that was that. So
yeah.
he went back to being Pentecostal. But because he was more religious than my mom, we were all just raised Christian. It
okay.
wasn't... it wasn't up for discussion. Okay. We just always were
raised that way. So you kind of took the spiritual leap of that and stuff like that. Oh, that's fascinating to me. So during Christmas, the Hanukkah?
What's funny is we've never, my mother celebrates two holidays.
Okay.
Two of the high holy holidays, which are Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. Okay. She lights her Yitzhak candles. She does her thing.
Right.
But we never grew up with Shabbat. We never did Hanukkah. We really did all of the Christian holidays.
Right.
So we just always knew my mother did her thing on those two high holidays.
Right.
And that was it.
And your dad kind of did his own thing, and you kind of followed your dad's stuff.
Correct. Yeah.
So you graduated from high school in Brooklyn?
Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so this is, I want to, how old were you in 2011? Or was it 16 years ago?
Well, if I'm 34. You mean 2001?
Yeah, 2001. What did I say?
Just,
2011,
yeah,
2001.
So I graduated high school in 2000. I was 17 going to be 18.
Okay.
So I was 18 going to be 19.
Okay, so you're 18 years old.
Yeah.
So an 18 years old girl, it's the 11th of September,
mm-hmm.
and you're in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were you heading to work or what were you doing?
So my building that I worked for at the Bank of New York was pretty much attached to like 7 World Trade Center.
Okay.
So that morning, my father happened to not go to work. TV was on. He said, Jessica, be careful when you take the train.
Right.
Something happened at the World Trade Center, but just be careful.
Okay.
I didn't think anything of it.
Okay.
Still went to work.
You take the subway.
Okay. Now, the subway goes on the F train. It goes above ground for 2 stops,
mm-hmm.
where you can see all of the city.
Right.
At that point, I saw that the second building, something was hit.
Okay.
Instead of taking my behind right back home, I thought to myself, okay, I have to go to work because if I don't go to work, I don't get paid.
Right.
And I had night school at college. I was going full-time night school.
Okay.
And my college was located about 3 blocks away from the Trade Center anyway. So I thought, oh, this can't be anything crazy. I need to go to work.
Because you probably just thought maybe it was a small plane or...
I didn't know what it was at that point.
Okay.
So basically, my train was the last stop that was going into the World Trade Center.
Okay.
They made all of us get off. And obviously, I realized something was wrong because when we all exited, you were trapped, essentially.
Right.
There was pandemonium. There was debris everywhere.
Okay. So you got out of the train.
Correct.
So the train stopped and he told everyone to get out.
Correct.
Which is interesting. Why would you tell everyone to get out under the World Trade Center?
Because the train wasn't...
They probably didn't think it would collapse.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're out there now. Then what? What's going on?
Well, at this point, I realize clearly there's something not good.
Right.
And there's people bleeding on the street. There's a whole bunch of stuff. Now, the stop that I get off on, which is the World Trade Center stop, that particular exit is in plain view of the towers. I remember looking up and seeing both of the buildings on fire.
Right.
And
did you see people jumping too?
So you could hear it. So I stopped.
Hear that bang,
you hear,
guys.
Yeah. So I stopped looking up because I didn't want to have that. I didn't want to have that
visual
image in my head for the rest of my life of actually seeing people plummet to their death.
Right. But you knew what was happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what ended up happening within minutes? I heard like a huge, like a loud roaring sound.
Mm-hmm.
It almost sounded like more planes were coming.
Okay.
So I thought, oh gosh, is this like a Pearl Harbor thing where they're just going to all start coming out of nowhere?
Yeah.
But it in fact was the building coming down.
Okay. So, how were you under the building then?
I was right in front of it.
Right in front of the building. So, okay. So you heard the roaring and
mm-hmm.
did you look up then?
Yeah, and that's when you saw it starting to come. But the police officers were like, everybody just run. It was just complete chaos.
So did you think you were going to die right there?
You know, I did. But what's really weird, and I suffer from anxiety, I wasn't anxious. It was kind of like, you need to put into action and get out of here.
Right.
Now, I guess me being a track runner all those years, that definitely came in handy because I ran.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so then eventually did that dust storm catch up with you?
No, it didn't. Okay. Thank God. So it was crazy because as I was running past City Hall, they were evacuating the mayor.
Okay.
So I could see them evacuating the mayor.
Right.
The cars are coming alongside and everybody's just running.
Okay.
Because you figure if you run obviously away, which is heading towards Uptown, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
But so basically it was a very, very long day. I ended up meeting six single women along the way.
Right.
And we all were just kind of keeping each other company because...
Were you crying?
No, I wasn't crying, but I think for all of us it was, oh gosh, now we're walking past 34th Street. Are they going to get the Empire State Building?
Oh, okay.
We're walking past the main post office. Are they going to get that?
Yeah.
So mostly we walked in silence,
okay,
to be frank.
Right.
At that point, all of the bridges and tunnels were closed. So I essentially was stranded on the island of Manhattan and wasn't able to get home.
Right.
Because
you see this on the news where they're getting on boats and they're,
yeah,
they're walking across.
They locked it down.
Oh, did they?
They locked it down.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't until one of the women that I met turned out to be a general manager of a Starbucks.
Okay.
So when we got to, I think it was 23rd Street in the city, we went in. I was finally able to call because my cell phone wasn't working,
right,
at that time. So I called my family to tell them that I was fine.
Okay.
And we were trying to figure out a way to get back into Brooklyn.
Oh, I bet they were glad they heard from you.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. So basically, we walked all the way uptown. I think it was almost to like 80-something Street.
Okay.
Because I thought if I can get into the Bronx, my aunt lives in the Bronx, and I can just go to my aunt's,
right,
house. Well, then we found out they opened up the 59th Street Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
They reopened it.
Okay.
Now, the 59th Street Bridge brings you into Queens. Once you're in Queens, I can get into Brooklyn.
Right.
So we ended up getting a cab. And I'll never forget it. It was five of us. In the New York City cabs, you can't fit five people in a cab.
Yeah.
And I remember it pulled up, and it was someone of Middle Eastern descent.
Right.
And we all just stood there, like, oh, my God.
Right.
I forced him, and if anyone knows me knows that I can usually convince people to do what I want them to do. And he took all five of us over the bridge into Queens.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah, and then one of the girls' brothers took everybody home.
Wait, when did it all hit you that day? Like, did you have a time where you just lost it, or just type of person to lose it?
It was hard because my parents became fixated, as most Americans and New Yorkers,
right,
became fixated on it. So all day, every day, my parents had the TV on.
Yeah.
And I kept trying to explain to them, like, I understand that as New Yorkers, we all experienced it.
Right.
You can look up in the sky and see,
yeah,
the stuff, even in Brooklyn. But I really went through it.
Right.
And I needed them to be cognizant of the fact that I'm a little bit more sensitive,
right,
to that. They didn't listen. They kept watching everything and, you know.
But it's interesting too, Jessica, that in a sense, this was 2001, and then all of a sudden it started affecting you. Like 5 years later or 6 years later?
About 6 years later. Well, initially it didn't.
Okay.
See, I was in school full time. And because my college was located
right
by Ground Zero,
yeah,
they were offering to give everybody a full tuition refund.
Right.
And I said, well, that's what these terrorists want.
Right.
They want our economy to plummet. I'm
right.
not going to do that.
Yeah.
So I actually walked over rubble with a mask on to go to night school. 4 days a week.
Wow.
And I did very well that year. I got all A's in school. I was determined to not allow them to win.
Right.
So if I allowed it to bother me, then that means they would win.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So it wasn't until about, I want to say maybe about 6 years later, I was flying on an airplane. My grandmother was going to be turning 100.
Mm-hmm.
They were having a big celebration for her in New York. And I was flying on a buddy pass, and for those who don't know what a buddy pass is, you know someone that works for an airline, it's kind of a standby seat.
Right.
So I missed two flights because they were booked. They finally got me on this last flight. Work was a bit stressful. They put me on the flight. It was a middle seat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've flown on a middle seat to Israel, which is 13 hours. I didn't have any issues. So I didn't think this day would be any different.
Right. And how short is this flight?
To New York, it's about 5 hours.
5 hours.
Yeah. So I'm sitting down, and all of a sudden, I start feeling anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly sure what's
right.
that. It gets worse and worse and worse until I have a full-blown panic attack. I felt like if I did not get off this flight, I was going to die.
Really?
Yeah.
So we are like hyperventilating?
Or? I couldn't breathe. The palpitation, I felt like my heart was going to come out of my chest. I got lightheaded.
Okay, and you couldn't figure out where this
No, because I've never had a panic attack before.
And so you literally walked off the plane?
Well, I was going to, but we were already on the runway.
Oh, jeez.
So the flight attendant, because I got up and yelled, stop the plane. I mean,
did you really?
It was that bad. I needed to get off. And the flight attendant quickly came over to me and said, lady, you need to take your medication. And I said, I don't have any medication. I don't know what's happening to me.
You need to take your medication. They just thought you had a mental illness or something?
So he probably thought I had anxiety or issues with flying. Right. And, you know, I've studied abroad in Holland. Right. I've pretty much traveled all around the world. So I didn't understand where this was coming from.
Yeah.
So I ended up staying on the flight.
Okay. Kind of calmed yourself down.
The two people next to me graciously talked to me throughout the flight to help manage anxiety. I was anxious the entire trip. But from that moment going forward, I now have anxiety. I cannot travel in a middle seat. Cannot, will not. Will not get on the flight.
And you figured out this is because of...
Well, yeah. So a few years later, I ended up going to therapy for something... talk therapy for something completely different.
Yeah.
And I told her about, like, my new sudden issue with feeling like I'm trapped or not being able to get out.
Right.
How it freaks me out. And it's never done that before.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me about any traumatic things that have happened, and I didn't really think that how this... I didn't think there was a correlation between the whole 9/11
Right.
And my fear now.
Yeah, years later.
Well, she explained to me that post-traumatic stress precisely happens years later.
Yeah.
And it kind of happens out of nowhere. So, yeah.
Like in the middle seat on a routine airplane ride.
Yeah.
And to the... I think you were telling me this when you were washing the car... It's some of the panic, even going to the theater.
Oh, gosh. So I love going to see operas, ballets, movies.
Right.
All of that kind of stuff makes me really happy.
Right.
I now, if let's say, for instance, the row is about 20 seats long.
Right.
If they stick me in the middle, I will have a full-blown panic attack. It needs to be a corner seat. And even then, if it's like, let's say, a play or an opera.
Right.
You know, if you get up, you are disturbing everybody else around you. So that kind of stuff still gives me the anxiety.
Right.
It lessens if I'm in an aisle seat because I know I'm not stuck here.
Yeah.
Right.
I can get up.
I can really get up if I need to.
Right.
So, yeah, I've gotten a little bit better with it. Now when I fly, I don't need to take anything. For a number of years, I needed to take something to calm my anxiety after that episode to fly.
Because I think you would tell me that just as long as you have the pill, that's just reassuring.
Correct.
You don't have to take it.
Yeah, a lot of times I could be fine. If I know that I don't have, let's say, the magic pill in my purse, if I get anxious, then that sometimes can bring on the response of feeling like, oh my gosh, now I'm going to have something.
Right.
So I'm kind of working through that. I've gotten better with the whole theater stuff.
Okay.
I've been to a few concerts lately where unfortunately the seating was in the middle.
Right.
And I just kind of have to like brace myself. Before I couldn't do that. So I am getting better with it.
Do you get to the point where you just go, I'm done with it. I just want to get over this. This is way too long.
All the time. And then I have to say, through therapy, I've realized that I have to now say that I'm an anxious person.
Okay.
And that's not a negative thing.
Right.
It's just I may run a little bit more anxious than another person.
Okay.
So I think more just not judging myself for it.
Right.
Because the more I want to get over something, the more it stays.
Yeah, it's almost like me and my tremor. It's the more I accept it, embrace it, this is who I am, the more other people accept it around me.
Correct.
You know, and I'm sure, do you get people saying, come on, Jessica, get over it?
People don't understand it.
Yeah.
They don't understand it. And I don't talk about the 9/11 thing very often.
The thing is, this is the first time I've heard about it.
Yeah.
Because you never talked to me about it.
Yeah, I don't talk about it very often.
Because
I guess for a long time, I look at this as a weakness. Like, for instance, I just met a new friend.
Okay.
We went to the movies last week to see Beauty and the Beast. And she went to buy the tickets, and she's like, okay, I'm booking the middle. And I thought to myself, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And the thought of having to explain to her, well, I have post-traumatic stress, and I can't sit in the middle. I didn't say anything.
Right.
What I then did was say, I'm going to purchase the tickets.
Right.
And then I told her, hey, these spots are available. She then said, no, the middle ones are available. I was like, yeah, but these spots are available.
Yeah.
We went. It was fine. We were kind of in the middle, but not really right. in the middle. But it's annoying because I don't want to have to point that out every single time. Yeah. You know?
So the thing, I don't know. So you look at it 16 years later. So this is something that you have to embrace. This is part of who I am. And this is it.
I don't think it's going to be like this forever, though. No. I think it's taken me a number of years to finally be okay with some things. I think eventually that might dissipate.
Yeah. Now, I noticed a lot of people that I've talked to through my ministry that when they have a disorder, and I love how it's called a disorder.
Right.
You know, it's just who we are. Or a disability that I have. That do you say, okay, Lord, you got to take this away from me. Do you make a matter of prayer or you just say, hey, this is me, this is what I have to live with?
I used to pray about it.
Okay.
And then I realized, oh gosh, I mean, it's really not the end of the world. So right. what? I have to sit in an aisle seat. Right. I can't sit in a middle seat. That means I just need to plan ahead.
Right.
I don't look at it as like something I can't live with.
Okay.
It doesn't affect my day-to-day life.
Right.
I have triggers,
right?
But I'm managing them.
Okay.
So I used to pray about it. Sometimes I'll pray about it, but not as much anymore.
Yeah. Okay. So when you moved out to California, why?
There was a couple reasons, but I had gotten accepted to USC undergrad, and I didn't go because my dad had open heart surgery, and I didn't think 3,000 miles away would
be smart.
So I've always wondered what it was like to move here.
Right.
And then a friend of mine back in New York, we started to look into moving together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met a man on an airplane, which is funny. Met him on an airplane.
Not in the middle seat.
No.
Okay.
And we started a long-distance relationship for 6 months.
Okay.
And his job was here, so I moved.
Okay. And so then you got in the relationship with this guy you were in. And obviously it didn't work.
Correct.
And so you stayed out here.
Yes.
And so what do you do for a living now?
I sell real estate.
Okay. So let's do a little plug. If you're interested in the real estate, she's an awesome real estate lady.
Thank you.
And she has connections. And she just closed an enormous deal in Malibu.
I did today, actually. Was it
today?
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Now we have to pay taxes.
I know, right? Well, you guys can ask Ruben and Esther because I sold them their house a few years ago.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. And they love their house.
They do.
So, okay. Now talk about your spiritual walk and going in your walk with the Lord because I want to kind of talk about this, too, that sometimes we realize with the events that happen in our lives, life is short.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You know, and you're only in your
30s.
34. I'm 20 years older than you, so I'm figuring life is short, you know, being 54. And so tell us about one of your closest friends, how you guys became friends.
Ironically enough, about 6 years, a little over 6 years ago, I started attending therapy.
Okay.
And I wasn't happy in my relationship. I was starting to become really anxious. I just physically sick, started suffering from insomnia.
Right.
I didn't really know what was going on with me.
Yeah.
And from stuff from my childhood, I always feel like the problem has to be me.
Right.
I'm the one that's not good enough. So I went to go see a therapist. And she was in the waiting room.
Oh, really?
And it was my first day. And I talked to everyone. It could be on the grocery line. I talked to everyone.
Okay.
So I asked her who she was seeing. She recommended her therapist.
Okay.
And we became friends ever since.
Okay. Now, let me unpack that because you said something very deep, too. And then we'll go back to your friend. You were saying, I don't feel worth.
Yeah, I always feel like no matter what I do, it's never good enough.
And just every aspect of life.
For the most part.
Far.
Yeah.
So that connects to your working and dating and
everything.
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you're pretty hard on yourself.
That's what people say.
Yeah. And the thing is, I am too. That's a problem. It's just, it's hard to, that's a drive in us.
Mm-hmm.
That's another issue that I have as well as you have. So therefore you became friends. You met this
Sabrina.
Oh, that's a beautiful name. So you met Sabrina, and then you just kind of...
We just bonded. It was, okay. I mean, as if we had known each other our whole lives.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you started doing things and hanging out together.
All the time.
Okay. So when did this shoe start to drop, this news, the negative news?
So 2016, May of 2016, she started kind of having this, like, pain that she was describing kind of in, like, her pelvic region. Wasn't going away for about like 2 weeks.
Okay.
She saw a bunch of doctors. Some said it was one thing. Some said it was another thing. Well, she ended up going to the emergency room.
And this is May of last year.
Yes.
Okay.
And on June 1st, they diagnosed her with stage 4 metastatic cancer.
What kind of cancer?
So metastatic cancer means it essentially has spread.
Okay.
Okay. So she had cancer of the bone, liver, and lungs.
Wow. So basically, this was in May, and then she discovered that it's all over her body.
In June.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Sabrina comes and tells you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was a hard conversation.
It's a very hard conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then when you're talking to Sabrina, now, because this is where I think a lot of us, our faith... just gets challenged to the core, you know?
I think my faith was challenged. Hers wasn't.
Really?
And Sabrina was not a very religious person.
Okay.
She believed in God.
Right.
She was raised Catholic, but she had an issue with organized religion.
Oh, don't we all?
I know. She went to Catholic school growing up. She had a lot of issues with how they ran things. But it was interesting. So she told me she was super optimistic. Like, literally from the beginning of her diagnosis to the day she passed, she never wavered that she was going to beat it.
Okay. And see, knowing you, you're probably going, you're thinking worst case.
Which is interesting. I'm thinking worst case, but Sabrina normally always thinks worst case.
Okay.
If I think it, whatever I think, it's like double what Sabrina would say.
Okay.
So when she initially told me, I'm like, oh, it's not. You're just going all the way left with your thinking. And she's like, no, just like it really is.
Right.
She never gave up hope. Never.
Never.
Never. And it was so shocking because, and I think honestly God gave her the strength to do that.
Right.
Because she may have died even sooner if she didn't have that outlook.
Because I always think, because when I look at people who are struggling with cancer, I was thinking, where in the world do you get the strength?
Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah. For me, it's got to be some kind of connection with God or something.
It has to be. But I guess for her, she knew she didn't have a choice.
Okay.
It was, I need to be strong.
Right.
I need to be optimistic because that is the only way that I'm going to beat it.
Okay. So therefore, did she get better any?
No, she got worse.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was this a matter of months, a matter of...
She started chemo pretty aggressively from the straight off the start. She ended up having a hip surgery because of the bone. It was all in her bone. She had no quality of life after she was diagnosed. She went pretty downhill. But she was kind of hiding from all of us what it really was. She never talked about it. She didn't want to talk about what stage it was.
Right.
I assumed metastatic has to be stage 4.
Right.
So that was just something I had in my mind.
Right.
I didn't... It was always kind of from the beginning I had a feeling she was going to die.
Right.
But there's always miracles that happen.
Yeah.
So I was kind of holding on to that.
The miracle.
Yeah.
The hope and the miracle.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us, it's like when Peggy, she was 38. How old was Sabrina?
33.
33 is way young.
It's what, 38, 33, terrible.
I mean, I'm thinking if I had cancer, I would say 54 is way too young.
I agree.
So at 33 years old, so I'm assuming your prayer life became strong, or were you just...
Honestly, I've been...
I'd rather have you lie.
I know, right? My prayer life has kind of struggled,
okay.
And I'll tell you when, since I got baptized.
Okay, really?
Yeah, I've noticed that it comes and goes, but it's more that it's not here. It's not present.
Right.
I don't know if it's I'm angry. I mean, I'm not really angry with God about Sabrina.
Yeah.
I mean, she did pass in 5.5 months. He took her very, very quickly.
No, do you remember the last conversation you had with Sabrina?
Like, real conversation? Yeah. A week before.
Okay, then she kind of lost it.
Yeah, I got a phone call. I was supposed to go there for Thanksgiving to spend Thanksgiving with her in Oakland. Because in September, her parents took her back home to Oakland to continue the treatment because it was just too much having it in L.A.
Yeah.
And I had already planned to be there for Thanksgiving. Right. And then the week before, I got an urgent call saying I need to get there now.
Okay. So you drove up to...
No, I got a flight out about 5 hours later. Okay. And she passed a day and a half later.
Okay.
So I was there at the hospital.
When she passed?
Yeah.
Okay. And was she alert?
You know, when I first got there, she kind of was. And in like pure Sabrina fashion, she's like, Jess, how are you? And I looked at her and I said, I'm okay. How are you? And I remember she said to me, this too shall pass.
Did she?
She said that to me. Yeah.
Huh.
Still, in that moment, she was still confident she was going to be there. Yeah. She was in organ failure. I mean, that's what that was at that point. But she wasn't aware of it.
So she passed a week before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And so I'm assuming your Thanksgiving was crap.
Well, I ended up flying back to Oakland to spend it with her family.
Okay.
Because I intended on doing that from the beginning. Right. And I think having me and one of her other best friends there was a little comforting for the parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. So this was in Thanksgiving. And I think the initial shock of everything with Sabrina and the funeral and stuff. Because I'm assuming a lot of it's what I've noticed is when we lose someone that's real close to us, we're in a shock. We're not really feeling.
It was pretty numb. They actually did not have a memorial for her right away. Okay. No. They just had the memorial about 2 weeks ago.
Okay. 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good grief. Okay, because we're taping this in March.
Mm-hmm. She passed in late November.
Wow.
Yeah. They couldn't bring themselves to do it. Then it was Christmas. Yeah. You know, it was Thanksgiving. Then it was Christmas. Then it was New Year.
Right.
It's
hard to do
it. It's hard. So they finally decided to put one on. So I think I've kind of been... I almost sometimes forget. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, earlier this week, I've been suffering from some health problems since mid-January, and they don't know exactly what's wrong with me.
Does that scare you?
It does, because I'm having a lot of pelvic pain.
Oh, and that's the same type of pain.
Yeah, but I'm pretty certain it's not anything.
Wait, stuff. Like you said, your worst case scenario.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there because they've done a pelvic sonogram, and I think if, you know, with Sabrina, they noticed right away that there were lesions. Yeah. So I think if there was anything, all the blood work they've been doing would clear it up. But, yeah, I mean, I've been in a lot of physical pain since January, and it's not going away. But... Oh, gosh, what was I saying? Where was I going with that?
We were talking about Sabrina. No, I don't even
know. Oh, so that's what I was going to say. So when I started not feeling well, Sabrina, both of her parents, her father's a cardiothoracic surgeon, and her mother is an oncology nurse.
Oh, my goodness, smart.
So she had really good people to kind of be around her. And I thought, darn it, do I take this other antibiotic? Let me call Sabrina. And that was just Monday.
Yeah.
And then I realized... Really? I can't call Sabrina.
Yeah.
It's been hard. Sabrina was more than just a best friend. She was like a sister to me.
Yeah.
So when I was at the emergency room at Cedars a few weeks ago by myself, 8 hours, Ubered it there, Ubered it home.
Right.
You realize, wow, you know, she was my family. Right. And she's not here.
See, this is what I wanted to kind of talk to you about, too. Because it's almost like when you went to the 9/11 thing and then it hit you years later and you lose your friend in November, Sabrina, a sister, and now it's hitting you hard now, too.
Yes, because it feels final now because we finally had the memorial.
Okay. So, because I know that you've been really struggling with it. You haven't talked to me about it.
You know, it's weird because people will say... You know, okay, so for years, people would ask me, how are you? And I would say, great, because you don't ever really kind of want to wear your heart on your sleeve, so to speak, right? And then they'll ask now, and I'm like, well, I'm just okay.
Yeah.
You know, well, why are you just okay?
Shut up. I don't worry.
I miss my friend.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, she was a part of my everyday life. But right. what's interesting, time moves slowly when you're dealing with the pain and the suffering. Mm-hmm. But to everybody else, well, she passed in November.
Right.
Did you think it was supposed to be easier for me in March?
Yeah.
It's not any easier.
Right.
You know?
So this... Time heals all wounds.
I will tell you that is one of the most frustrating sayings that anybody can tell you when you lose a loved one.
Yeah.
I frankly just don't say anything.
Yeah.
I tell someone I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm here if you need me. Because all these little phrases that I know you mean well when you say it.
Right. Or they're in heaven.
Correct.
Or they're not suffering.
She's not suffering. I don't care. Like, she's not here.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, she is not here.
Right.
And one of the last things that she said, she kept saying when she was in the hospital, I don't want to die.
Right.
How do you
get peace with that?
How do you have peace when
yeah.
someone is saying clearly, I don't want to go?
Yeah.
I get she's not suffering, and she really was right. suffering in the end. But the reality of the fact is my friend's not here anymore.
Right.
So
and at 33 years old saying I don't want to go. So here, let's so you experienced a good friend, your age.
Yeah, she's my age.
33 years old. I don't want to go. That's got to mess with your relationship with God, Christ. You're expecting a miracle. Do you go to the point, because look, I'm a pastor, Jessica. I feel this way sometimes, mm-hmm. going, what in the world? Throw me a miracle here.
Throw me a miracle.
And you know what? God, you're going to look awesome. There's sometimes I want to be God's PR person mm-hmm. and say, look, you're going to look good. And my prayers are negotiating with God, going, look, you're going to look good in this, do this, heal her.
Doesn't work that way.
You notice that?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't work. So how do you embrace, like, this is reality, but yet you still come to church?
I do.
Is that out of obligation or... Because you said your prayer life sucks. You didn't yeah. say it sucks.
No, it does stink.
Okay.
I will say it does stink.
Yeah.
My father...
It's almost to the point of, you go, why pray?
Yes. But since I was a little girl,
right,
my dad would come into the room and tell us goodnight, my sister, myself, and my brother, because we all shared a room.
Okay.
And he would say, pray, good night, and I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was said every single day since I was a kid.
Okay.
And my sister would tell me the same thing because we had two little canopy beds next to each other. She would say, okay, pray, good night, I love you. And we would go to sleep.
Okay.
It was always instilled in us that we would pray. And during your prayer, you end up falling asleep.
Right.
Right? For the last 6 years, I've suffered from very, very bad insomnia.
Right.
My father still tells me, Jessica, are you praying before you go to bed? I kind of have like a love and hate relationship with prayer.
Okay.
There's a part of me that feels like, why pray? It doesn't, nothing ever changes.
I hear you.
I thought I would be angry with God with Sabrina.
Right.
I think I'm kind of at a, I don't know if it's imposition, but more like, I just don't understand why.
Right.
Just a few days ago, I found out that another friend passed away in New York.
Of yours?
Yes. 28 from an asthma attack. 28.
A girl?
A boy.
28 years old from an asthma attack.
Goodness. And you say to yourself, like...
Self?
I just don't understand this.
Right.
And I would ask my father, like, oh, if God is such a... what is it? Merciful God? Is that the word?
Or loving God.
Like, how does he let this happen?
Right.
And he always says, Jessica, but it says in the Bible that this isn't necessarily his doing.
Right.
It's just life, you know? And he can't stop everyone from dying.
Yeah.
But,
It would be nice.
It would be nice, right? But then this planet would... will be non-existent from El Niño sooner than we...
That's true.
Than we want it to be. But, so I don't know. I'm kind of at a weird point. I pray sometimes. I don't pray sometimes.
Yeah.
Not mad at him, though.
Okay.
I just am kind of like, really?
Yeah. So, okay. So, at least the one or two people are listening to this podcast. Okay. I just put my expectations down. But no, there's a lot of people who listen to this. Okay, let's say they're saying, hey, Jessica, you know, I lost my friend, and they're telling me that I should praise God. because they're in heaven. Mm-hmm. Or I have a friend that's sick. How do you deal with it? What advice, or would you give anyone advice? Or how do you, because most people in your situation emotionally step back from Sabrina.
Yeah, her boyfriend did. He didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah, did he really? Yeah, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. See, that's what happens, because we don't want to feel.
Yeah.
And we want to do that, so we pull away. So Sabrina was dumped when she got the
kid. Well, no. Thank God he stayed with her, but, you know, he's the type of individual that can only do so much.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So I think he was also in denial.
Right.
And when she went back up to Oakland, literally did not see her until the week before she passed.
Oh.
I think in his mind, you know, he also said he never lost anyone to cancer.
Right.
All the people he knew that had cancer in his life all beat it.
Yeah.
So he never thought for a moment Sabrina was not going to beat this.
And Sabrina didn't either.
Yeah. She thought she would beat it.
So because you stuck it through.
Yeah.
You know, with Sabrina and stuff. And obviously you have no regrets. Or do you?
I do.
I like that smile on your face.
So she ended up leaving back to Oakland the end of August.
Okay.
Which I had seen her like 4 times a week when she was in LA.
Right.
I told her, she would be like, Jess, I'm really not up for company. And my response to her was, you don't even need to talk to me.
Right.
You can be asleep on the couch. I'll bring my laptop.
Right.
And I'll work.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to be next to her.
Right.
So that's one piece of advice, that if it's someone very dear to you,
okay,
just showing up.
Right. And not saying anything.
I didn't have to say anything. Yeah. She would be asleep. Right. I would be on my laptop and I'd work.
Right.
I didn't know how much longer I'd have her in my presence.
Right.
So even if she was asleep, it was still, I'm next to Sabrina.
Yeah. No, what I think it's cool with you, that and if you're listening to the podcast, Jessica has this way of just being straightforward and honest where she is, and not having any regrets with your friend, mm-hmm. but really saying, this is crap, this is stupid, this is crazy. And so I think my last question was, if somebody's going through loss of a friend, your advice was just be there and don't say anything?
Just be there and listen.
Okay.
You know, I think everybody sort of kind of has regrets.
Right.
Because when she went back up to Oakland, I didn't get there soon enough. Like, right. I planned to be there in November. I had two prior engagements in September.
Right.
And then my niece was turning 2, which was a very big birthday in the beginning of October, because my niece was diagnosed with a very rare form of like cancer in her blood when she was 4 months. And the doctor said that if she reaches her second birthday and it never spread, that she'd be cleared.
Right.
So that was a big celebration. Yeah. I was going to New York. Nia was turning 2. All is going to be well.
Yeah.
And then when I got back from New York, it was late October, and I was going to go to Oakland then, and then Sabrina's like, I was like, well, I guess I could just come for, like, Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how progressed it was that I was going to have only, like, another 4 weeks with my friend. Right. So I'm trying not to beat myself up and say, I wish I was there for longer.
Right.
Because she wouldn't want that.
Yeah.
And I know the heart of Sabrina, she would not want that.
Yeah.
But the only advice I would say is, at least in mourning, is you kind of have to allow yourself to feel it.
Yeah.
I oftentimes suppress my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm generally not a crier. If I cry, it's rare.
Right.
So I was kind of holding it in all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up going to therapy, because my therapist was her therapist, who was also going through a tragic loss.
Wow.
Because she had been treating her for years.
Yeah.
Which Sabrina would be mortified if I told people that. But and she told me, Jessica, you have to allow yourself to feel it.
Right.
I oftentimes try to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I don't have a choice but to be strong, because mm-hmm. I literally am here alone.
Mm-hmm.
All of my family is in New York.
Right.
So if I fall apart, who's going to sell that house?
Right.
Where's the money going to come from?
Yeah.
I
can't fall apart.
I can't. And that's kind of always been my thing. I can't fall apart. But lately, I'm trying not to fall into a depression because it's really hard. And I know she wouldn't want me to fall into a depression, but it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah. So if I feel that urge to cry or I want to be sad for the day, I'm allowing myself to just feel it and stop suppressing it.
Yeah. It's like me. I even put it on my calendar to feel.
Really?
Yeah. Because my schedule is so busy sometimes, and I don't want to get into it because of family issues that came up. Mm-hmm. I don't have time today, but I'll fill it tomorrow because I'm off tomorrow. So anyway. But anyway, thank you, Jessica. And I appreciate you doing this podcast. And if you enjoyed this podcast, Jessica sometimes comes to church, sometimes doesn't.
Listen, I'm a realtor. And I have open houses on Sunday. So
she was at church last Sunday, which made me happy. It just made me smile. And so if you see Jessica, give her a hug or tell her that, well, don't give her a hug if you don't know her.
Oh, I don't care. Okay. I'm open to hugs.
If you enjoyed this podcast, and do share these podcasts to other people, because these podcasts are for people that are just going through a journey. They haven't made the destination yet. And they're being real with their walk with the Lord and their prayer life. And so remember, and I always say this, and this is appropriate. Every time I end one of these podcasts, I say, every day is a gift from God. Use it wisely. God bless you, and I'll talk to you guys and see you next week. God bless you. Bye. You did good.
Thank you.
I know.
Okay.